Hello, I'm Philip Stoughton from My House to Yours. Welcome to another edition of EMS at Sea Level. Today, I am joined by Peter Nielsen from Keytron. Thanks for joining me. Pleasure to chat to you finally. We've spent some time getting this one organized, but let's start with a quick introduction to yourself, your background, and then just a brief high-level overview of Keytron.
Great. Thanks for having me. Pleasure being here. My name is Peter Nielsen. I've been working with electronics since the early 90s after getting out of the university. First 10 years with the Ericsson Group, working on mobile infrastructure. So really getting the taste for product development, NPI, and all of the sort of beautiful challenges of making things work in manufacturing. Mm-hmm. I spent about 10 years there. Left Ericsson when I was working in the U.S. for Ericsson and jumped over to Sanmina SCI, or actually SCI at that time, which then was acquired by Sanmina.
Spacecraft Industries.
There you go. There you go. Out of Rocket City, Alabama. So I spent 7 years with Sanmina, first 3 years in the U.S. and then another 4 years in Sweden. Running operations, restructuring. This was during the time of the telecom crisis, and a lot of the business was telecom, so tough times. A lot of plant closures and sell-offs and divestitures, mostly. Mm. So not a lot of positive stuff, but...
Yeah, a bit of a baptism by fire. Yeah.
And then after that, I left and I went to work for a smaller company up here in the north of Sweden, where I live, and spent 3 years with them before I went to PartnerTech, another Swedish EMS company that today is part of the Scanfield Group.
Yeah.
I spent 4 years with PartnerTech as the president of the electronics division. And then I was recruited to head up the company I'm with today, Keytron Group, with headquarters and in Oslo, Norway, and listed on the Oslo Stock Exchange. So I went to Keytron in 2014. It was about 140, 150 million euros a year. Not profitable to speak of. And I'd gone through some tough times in the reduction of the oil and gas business. As the oil price dropped from, you know, $150 to $25 a barrel, and everybody sort of closed their businesses in high-cost countries and moved to Malaysia. But we took the company out of that, and we've grown. So today, this year, we're looking at about 600 million euros. And it's been a nice growth all along, about 10% per year. And we've become a profitable company.
Yeah.
And yeah, so 4x doing that.
Yeah, 4x in 8 years. That's you know, that's an impressive growth. And you know, one of the things that it impressed me about Keytron is you have that triple play in your geography. You have a really solid base in Europe, and particularly in the Nordics, but you also have manufacturing in Asia and in the US. Yeah. Is that something that's been strategic and something that you find is really important with your customers?
I think we, you know, from day one since I joined in 2014, we've talked about regional supply chains and being close to our customers, but also being able to offer them manufacturing in the market that they may be selling in, because a lot of our Nordic industrials are big in other countries and they have set up shop in other countries, so maybe doing final integration work there. So that's been our strategy with our Chinese operations, is to talk about China for China in our manufacturing, and we've shifted over a lot of manufacturing focusing on the Chinese market from China, and not so much an export, even though we do have export left today also.
Yeah. And you've grown some through acquisition. I think the US was an acquisition, and you did the acquisition of BB Electronics in Scandinavia last year. Tell me a bit about the M&A strategy within Keytron.
It's shifted over the years. You know, you try to come up with a strategy and say that this is what we want. We want to be in a new region with new customers, but within the same market segments that we know about. So that has been the sort of strategy until we came across a carve out in the U.S. A few years ago, and that made sense for us because you know there was a nice piece of business. It was defense aerospace, most of it, and we did that smaller acquisition, and then we took a look at BB Electronics back in September, October last year, and very quickly saw that hey, this is a really good business. It's similar to what we do, but not necessarily in the exact market segments we're mm-hmm. in. They're adding a lot of HVAC business, smart home electronics business, things like that. A strong penetration into the German market, which we were not. Mm. So it made sense. It gave us more manufacturing in China, which was not ideal, yeah. But still, you know, it was a nice piece of business. And then a third site in Central Eastern Europe. We had Lithuania and Poland before. Now we've got a new site in the Czech Republic also.
Yeah. Yeah. And it makes sense. And you know what, Peter, when I look at M&A, I think it's part strategic, but it's part opportunistic. You've got to move with the market. You've got to see what's available there, and you've got to make the right decisions, but make them quickly to be able to capitalize, because I look at it now and I think, well, the market's completely different to the market we had 12 months ago. You know, 12 months ago, stuff in the US was selling for ridiculously high multiples, and you know, the market's very different today. So.
Complete reset of multiples over the past, mm-hmm. you know, just the past 3 months, really. Especially in our industry, we're seeing it continue to drop. Still high multiples compared to many other industrials, but we'll see where that ends up.
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of the market where we are at the moment, you know, it's been one disruption after another. It was trade wars between China and the US. We dropped straight from that into a pandemic. As we come out of the pandemic, we have all kinds of supply chain issues. The economy is shaky, so we don't know what's coming next. Have you had to redesign your business to be more resilient, or just kind of be a business that lives with permanent disruption?
I think the latter, right? We have, and it's sort of always been part of my thinking. Is you plan for the best, but prepare for the worst all the time, mm-hmm. and that's what we did towards the end of 2019 when we started to get indications something's going on here with COVID.
Yeah.
And then we were supposed to have a management meeting in January. This is before COVID really kicked off.
Yeah.
And our director out of China said, well, listen, I can't come because, you know, this is bad. So that management meeting was spent on looking at how are we going to act in this situation? What do we need to be doing? We started to hear about people in ICUs and lack of ventilators. Mm. We were building for one of the best customers that has 25% of the world market for the high-end ventilation equipment. Mm. So we immediately started talking to them. You guys need to sort of bump up your forecast. We need to start buying here, and finally we got around to that, and we supplied 4 years of volume over the summer months in 2020.
Yeah.
So with an extreme economy of scale of that site that built those products. And that helped make 2020 into actually one of our best years, profit-wise at least, because of those economies of scale.
Yeah.
And then we started looking at, you know, what we're looking at is now is how do we continue to manage this component situation?
Yeah.
Almost all EMS companies that I look at least over the first half of this year, have doubled their inventory compared to the first half of last year. Because not because they're putting extra, you know, some of it is extra stock, but most of it is they're not getting product out the door.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on with us also. We've doubled inventory, size of inventory. And that cannot continue, right? You know, that is not working capital. That is sleeping capital. And our price model is not based on carrying that much inventory. Our price model is carrying, 3 to 4 months. The customers want us to carry more, well, then they're going to have to pay for it somehow.
And that brings me to another point, which is that kind of interesting situation we've been in recently where the supply chain relationships have been stressed. I think there has been some damage done between the EMS companies and the component distributors, because I think EMS companies and some OEMs feel they've been let down by the component distribution industry that seems to be making an insane amount of profit at the moment. But when I look at the EMS and the OEM relationship, those that have been honest with their OEM partners and those that have said, look, we're all in this situation, let's work out what we can do together, how we can prioritize projects, how we can perhaps spin up redesigns, how we can work together to get out of it, have actually made their partnership stronger, made them more collaborative, more open, and more honest. Is that what you're finding?
Very much so. Very much so. And talking about one thing is sort of shared responsibility for the growth of inventory. Another is actually coming to the sort of insight that the product actually needs to be redesigned. Very few customers were early in adopting this. We've talked about it for a year and a half about what's happening in the wafer industry, how further miniaturization is going on, and why that's happening, because it drives down energy consumption, the product becomes faster, you get more output per wafer, all of those sort of describing to the customer what's going on. And some have then started to do that. Others have sort of waited it out. I will wait because this will solve itself.
This will pass.
I don't know that it will, and I'm not convinced that all of the parts that are sort of on shortage or on 12-month lead times now will ever become available again.
Yeah,
I don't know that they're going to start those manufacturing lines up.
No, because a lot of that stuff's old generation, and the investment that's going in, the new capacity that's going to come online, is mainly going to be the next generation of
where it's easiest obviously is products within connectivity, for example, where product life cycles maybe are 6 months, where you're introducing new products every 3 months, time to market is everything, so you're working a lot with new designs. Worst off is medical and defense aerospace, where there's approval cycles and verification cycles are very, very long, and just don't switch something out without, major cost. But even that's going to have to happen, especially with the strong growth now in defense aerospace. We're looking forward.
Yeah, and it has to be done in collaboration, in partnership with the manufacturing team, which is you guys. So I think it plays into that idea of shifting from service to much more of a manufacturing partnership. And I think that's, I think if we can learn lessons from that and we can keep that bodes well for the future. What about the next shortage that seems to be coming along, which is talent? How are you managing that? Is it challenging to get the right people? Are you having to do more training internally? Are you having to apply more automation to reduce your dependency on talent?
All of the above. Yes, talent has been, for the past 3 years or so, I would say, an ongoing concern. Unemployment levels are extremely low to begin with in Northern Europe. On a local level, we work together with both universities and trade schools, stepping up the specific university or college educations, setting up specific educations within trade school that would immediately get you into the sort of job you need to be at. And I think that has somewhat of an impact, but the growth in our industry and our customers' industry is much higher than the output. And especially if we're located in the same city as some of our customers are, those will tend to, grab talent from us and from the universities and other schools.
Yeah, it's curious, isn't it? The OEM has always seemed like a more attractive place to work, and I think
but not everybody stays, right? Yeah. They go there, and some come back after 3 months.
Yeah,
some sort of can't swallow their pride, so it takes them maybe 2 years
before, a bit longer to come back.
Try to come back, but within our industry, there's sort of freedom. There's the possibility to work with so many different kinds of market sectors, products, customers, and even if you go to the OEM and they entice you with 30% more pay, but the job is so boring.
Yeah, yeah. One product, one location.
There's always challenges here. We've got slim targets, slim margins. And there's a will to win within the organization that makes you sort of feel you're directly part of the success or failure that month for your site.
No, I think it's an exciting industry, and there's no doubt there's opportunity to get from the factory floor all the way into the C-suite. And
but look
at countless examples of that happening.
Looking into longer term here for the next 5 years, we're looking at how do we continue to secure talent and also work on operating expenses, because we've had some pretty high salary inflation in Eastern Europe. It's been more stable in the Nordics, but there's not a lot of talent. Small country, especially in the Baltics, not a lot of people. So we're looking at other regions, for example, India, and expanding some of our service parts of our organization. We already buy engineering services out of India, quoting services, product setup services, things like that, and that expansion will continue over the next 5 years.
Yeah, and I think it's actually an exciting market. The India for India market is an exciting one to be exploring further down the line. It's been one of those sectors that people have said, oh, yeah, India could compete with China. And it's for the last 20 years, it's been, but when? But I think there are some really interesting opportunities there. So I think my sense is you're quite bullish about the future. You're quite positive. You see continued growth.
I'm comfortable talking about a 10% growth per year, right?
And
that's organic, in spite of continued component challenges the next year. There's a much stronger demand from customers, but sort of have to weigh do a sensitivity analysis on that and say, okay, I've got a 40% upside and I've got a 30% downside. What am I comfortable with? And weigh in all of the risks. But a 10% growth, no doubt, over the long term, over the next 5 years, is what we're looking at. Organically. Yeah,
organically, and then strategy and opportunist on the M&A side will continue.
We have some ideas.
Grow as a business.
As the decoupling out of China and China for China market strategy continues. Looking at other parts of Southeast Asia, we're continuously looking at India as a basis for operations also. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it sounds like an exciting future. Lots going on, more disruption, more challenges, and it's all about meeting them head on, having the team to do it, and having that focus on success. The meantime, though, Peter, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm sure we'll do this again sometime.
My pleasure.
I look forward to that.